String 34. The Librarian. Audacity is now light years away from the greater arc. I sit, shivering in armor that barely functions. Beside me, catalog is quiet. Whether it is still recording, I cannot know. My entire body tingles. The air around me smells strange. I can dimly make out symbols describing in basic Ancilla code something or other. So long since I have had to read such symbols. Then they reform and translate into measurements I can understand. Despite the interference of the star roads, we have completed our transit. I can only assume that the Didact has survived as well. Before making our jump, I ordered Monitor Chakas to proceed to the Lesser Arc and deliver all that we managed to salvage. Against all odds, we managed to save a number of humans, including the small Florian, Riser, and the young female Venevra recovered from the rogue halo. This seems to substantially improve the Monitor's commitment and energy. It still has friends to protect. Although this comforts Chakas, it does not comfort me. The number of humans we managed to save is not nearly enough. Never before has the frailty of their species been more apparent than right now. But others' plans are already at work, and I must focus all of my energy on the task ahead. I am left alone to do what I must do. There can only be one Didact, and that is not the first. Strange how cold I feel in my head and chest, in my throat, as if I have been choked with ice as I affirm that. I have seen what the Flood holds in store for the galaxy. I have seen it in his haunted eyes and desperate cruelties. He cannot be allowed to carry out his plans, whatever they may be. And yet, what can I do against him? How can I stop his madness? Looking out upon the slowly turning stars, feeling the humming preparations as Audacity finds a solution for our next jump, I reach a quick and desperate decision. I have a few last cards to play. I will use the Ur-Didact's past love for me, our intense and intimate partnership over thousands of years, as a weapon against him. Audacity has my personal transponder codes. Using those, we may still be recognized as a safe ship, even an unremarkable companion by Mantle's approach. It is possible that Requiem's automated systems will also accept me and allow me entry without setting off alarms, or even notifying the Didact of my presence, though that seems unlikely. Two possibilities, both, I think, with a slender chance of success. I can join the Didact's ship, a very large vessel dwarfing Audacity. Or I can follow in train, in shadow, all the way down to Requiem, into his beloved shield world for which we labored so long and for which he has suffered so horribly. The solution is found. We follow. What I feel as we approach Requiem is past all polite description. Rarely have I experienced this kind of rage, disappointment, or sorrow. I have decided upon playing a shadow. We apparently have attracted no notice within Mantle's approach. A key ship intercepts our track, accepts Audacity's portfolio, as well as that of the Didact's vessel, and guides both ships to the forbidding, steel-hued curve of the massive construct, bigger than many stony planets. Built as a fortress world long before the human wars, Requiem was a template for those which would follow. Shield worlds of extraordinary power, capable of surviving the Flood. With these strongholds, he could have established defensive and offensive brains with far greater speed and flexibility than the Halos. The scale and brilliance of the Didact's strategic plan now appears more like the tomb of all hope, certainly of all my hopes. A dream we had both shared is little more than a repository for a Promethean long since chewed up and cast aside by history, by force of his enemies, human and forerunner, and by the dire influence of the Flood. And yet, this enormous construct, nothing less than a completely artificial world, this bastion designed for endless war, still impresses in a way that a halo cannot. Coming around the starlit curve, I see brilliant beacons stab up to illuminate 7 captured ice-coated planetoids, waiting to be broken down and deliver their essential components. Hydrogen, deuterium, oxygen, nitrogen, carbon, silicon, aluminum, nickel, iron, rare earths, enough to last for millions of years. As the reflective orb rotates beneath my ship, I see also the outstretched, feather-like plumes of vacuum energy pylons, drawing in the potential of an infinity of alternate realities, aborting untold numbers of nascent universes to supply Requiem's power. Strange that these cosmic deaths have never before struck me as cruel and futile. All of Forerunner technology has been made possible by drawing down vacuum energy. My own life, all that I know, arises out of cosmic predation. Requiem's capabilities are for the most part unknown to me, secrets not meant for life workers. When the shield worlds were designed, the far-scattered assembly of their component parts was planned to discourage a complete understanding of armaments and capabilities, even among builders. Only the warrior servants who would serve in these redoubts, the Didact's beloved fellow Prometheans, would be apprised of their final configurations. I wonder if all the remaining Prometheans have gathered in Requiem. So many have died in attempting to quell the Flood. A small number still maintain their conversions to builder security, but all, to my knowledge, still bear a tremendous loyalty to the Didact. Are they here, finally, to join with my husband? Audacity is wrapped in a buffer that nullifies all ancillas and other internal processes. The Didact cannot afford to have a potentially infected ship enter his place of final refuge, for however long it may take to fulfill his cruel vision. The vision of an endless future war. What does he plan for my composed humans? Will he hold them for ransom, threaten to torture them? What game does he think he's playing? Already I am working to repair the damage he has done. The humans on the Greater Ark and then the Omega Halo were the most diverse of their kind in the galaxy, and the last, with the exception of those few Chakas managed to save, and the populations left behind on Erda Tyrene. And what if Erda Tyrene is now in the middle of a burn? It may have long since been overcome by the Flood. But we need all we can recover. Otherwise, I have little hope of bringing back the human race. My message to Chantigreen was brief but clear. Bring your key ship to Erda Tyrene. Secure whatever humans might remain and await further instruction. My choices, too, are narrowing. My story seems to be shrinking down to a single black point in the immense skein of possibilities I had planned for when first I put the Didact into a cryptum, then hid that cryptum on Erda Tyrene. How clever I thought I was. How devious and clever to outwit the Council, confound the Didact, cut deals with the Master Builder, all to save my specimens, all to keep a diversity of life ready for whatever might come in our galaxy. We are drawn into Requiem's outer shell. Sentinels and Despair-class fighters swarm around us like wasps. Now comes another disappointment for the Didact. So few of his warriors have arrived to join him. The gateways through the shell that could have received hundreds of thousands of vessels are still open, but reveal only a handful of dreadnoughts and one fortress-class ship of war, plus a few dozen smaller, older transports that may have been residues of builder stocks, intended to serve as scrap. Audacity confirms that there are no Forerunner signatures on any of these. They're all empty, abandoned. Word of his difficulties, of his shameful capture and treatment by the Grave Mind, might have eroded the last of the Didact's support among even those who revered him. I feel embarrassment for him, even shame. But no pity, not after what he has done. Is anyone here with him now other than me? I have heard nothing from the Greater Ark since our departure, and nothing whatsoever for years from the protected Lesser Ark. The silence of the Greater Ark can mean one of two things. Either communications have been blocked again, or it no longer exists. Based on what I saw, I suspect the latter. Catalog is now almost fully revived and says it has no problems interacting with the juridical network, using channels reserved out here for a much larger demand, so far almost unused. Indeed, Catalog has been happily updating all of its caseload, staying out of my way as I brood in the command center. We follow Mantle's approach through the outer shell and then through 50 kilometers of cold inactive layers, past great columnar supports and archways visible in the stray beams of sentinels, emplacements where weapons were to be mounted by the thousands, but which stand only as stripped-down shadows. through outrushing clouds of gas, into more active layers, lit in cold blues and greens. Deeper still, hundreds of kilometers. I do not yet see a chance to board Mantle's approach. Only now does Requiem's long-forgotten beauty greet me. Here, for thousands of kilometers on all sides, off into silvery green haze, spreads a wide, high-ceilinged vista, illuminated by tiny sunlets flaring like brilliant green flowers. Sculptured mountain ranges sparkle with crystalline chunks of mineral-hard ice, awaiting heat to create another sanctuary for life-worker specimens. A stab of sharp pain at that sterile, unfinished landscape. But no forerunners will be brought here. All that I push back into the depths of mind and memory. I have but one duty now, and that is to see my husband locked in his cryptum and all of his crimes with him. Once that is done, I will return to Erde Tyrene. Audacity comes to rest beside Mantle's approach on one side of a wide cylinder that plunges over 1,000 kilometers below the dock's cradling arms. The cylinder is likely a delivery tube for larger weapons, bigger than most of our ships, either already in place or soon to arrive, after which the tube will close off along with all the gateways, and the outer shell of Requiem will be sealed. I wonder where those weapons are arriving from, or whether they will ever be installed. At this point, I decide it is impractical to try to board the Didact's ship without a proper understanding of Requiem's situation. As well, my luck with the old shield world might be stronger than with the vessel in which the Didact currently resides. In this I am so far correct. Requiem assents to my permission to cross over, and provides me with an innocuous escort of servile sentinels. I spend fully 3 hours moving through half-finished levels where warrior servants might have once been quartered, but where now I see only Ancilla-guided factories working at full speed to produce... what? Machines shaped like warriors? At last, I begin to see the faintest glimpse of his cruel scheme. Finally, in the antechamber to the cryptum repository, I am met by a warrior servant I have not seen in thousands of years. A Promethean, and giving me a bit of a shock. Someone I would never have expected retired long ago, so I heard. A Promethean who under other circumstances might have led a quite different existence, had I not intervened. Her name is Endurance of Will. She was adjutant to Bitterness of the Vanquished during the Human Wars, as well as one of the Ecumene's top strategists, almost as brilliant as the Didact. Her own expression, seeing me in the sentinels, is quite thoroughly controlled, though I notice a slight tightening of her wise, discerning eyes. We stand 12 meters apart. Life Shaper, we are honored and surprised by your presence, she says. Smaller than most of her rate and rank, but with a distinctive cat-like grace, she wears a uniquely simple style of battle armor. No decorations, no spikes. Supple curves conveying quiet strength. Why is my husband not fully attended? I ask. Such a direct question brings no surprise, but she must be asking herself why I am here. He is attended, Life Shaper. I am here, at his request. And he is also attended by these, evidently, I say, pointing to the factories. Endurance acknowledges us much with a sideways nod, still watching me politely but closely. It is then that I understand why those ships were empty and realize with horror what happened to his most loyal Prometheans. Slaves implanted in machines. Did you support the Didact in these plans? The Didact is our commander, she says, with just a hint of caution. She is sounding me out, trying to discover not only my reason for being here, but my goal. I am subordinate. I do not make command decisions. When will you join your fellows? As a machine, I ask. Eventually, she answers, and then with an impatient output of breath. Soon. Surely the Didact told you what he thought you should know. More than I wanted to know, I say. The Didact can answer better than I. Did you request human essences? I ask. They will serve well enough. They were gathered by a composer from my sanctuary, without my permission. He has weaponized his former enemies and installed them in the heart of this construct. Is this the act of a sane forerunner? Of a warrior who respects the mantle? All things bow to resolve, Endurance says, the mantle included. Only now do I begin to sense the depth of her doubt, and possibly even her misery. I remember her as a sensitive and honorable warrior. She may still be convinced to help, but I have to have a compelling strategic argument. And I do. When he returned from the burn, he brought back with him new strategies to battle the Flood. This? The transformation of his own into machines? The Didact did not anticipate your presence. He does not realize you're here, does he? With her own powerful views of battle planning, Endurance and the Didact have often clashed in the past. I'm taking the chance that this time she disagrees with her commander sufficiently to at least listen to my entreaty. It is she who will be entombed with my husband, not me. Endurance begins to walk down a wide hall flanked by ornately patterned columns of hard light, the first I've seen in Requiem, which has to this point consisted of Forerunner base material, undecorated and rudimentary. It would be best if I took you to the Didact now, Lifeshaper. I presume he will welcome such an interruption. What does he plan for his new warriors, Promethean? I cry out, my voice echoing down the long hall. I wonder if he can hear me, and if he learns I am here, what will he do? He will assume the worst, probably, but he is desperate enough, mad enough to rid this sanctuary of my irritating and possibly dangerous presence. Victory, as always, Endurance says, her back to me. Against what? Do you have something to tell me, Lifeshaper? Something I should know? Need to know? Her armor flexes, ripples. Perhaps not, I say. Perhaps you already understand. You are here to protect your husband. That much I would expect. Tell me how you would protect him, Lifeshaper. The Didact is tired. The Didact is highly energized and devoted. The Didact is on the point of collapse. I have not seen that. Spoken with less firmness. The Didact is not thinking clearly. I say, what evidence? Endurance asks, slowly turning to face me again. Already she violates her honor, showing any willingness to hear my criticism of her commander. Her doubts must be deep, and they must be drawn up, exposed. He was interrogated by a grave mind, I say. I know that much. If you were a grave mind, such an amalgam of ancient memory, Forerunner memory and experience, how would you forge a weapon to strike at the center of Forerunner defenses? She narrows her eyes severely. I have struck a strong chord and a sour one. Her nostrils compress as if she does not want to breathe the same air as me, but she folds her arms and continues to listen. An honorable and courageous leader is delivered unexpectedly into your control, I say. A leader whose return might bring hope and renewed strength to the Forerunner Ecumene. And yet his return has brought nothing but sorrow and horrific destruction, not only to his own rate, but now to the humans as well. He's become a foolish pawn in a dark game of revenge that began long ago. The Primordial, Endurance says. The Primordial. An experience so traumatic he kept the facts hidden from me for 10,000 years. Such a creature, with such a dark brilliance, would play upon his oldest fears, twist emotions made fragile during a lifetime of war and hardship and politics, twist, intensify, and distort them. Prometheans have, for hundreds of thousands of years, been proofed against that sort of pressure, Endurance says. Torture has never broken one of our rank. They have no training against this adversary, no armor or protection against the heirs of those who created us. The Didact has been subject to the examination of something so very close to a god, one related to those we assumed had passed the mantle to us, but most definitely have not. Enough, Lifeshaper! I will not listen to blasphemy, even from you. Has he brought you into his plans? Made them clear? Clear enough. I serve, I do not judge. He believes he will defeat the Flood with these new Prometheans, that the scattered remnants of Forerunners will survive, and that they will eventually reunite. He will summon them, then govern and reorganize. Requiem will become center for the Forerunner resurgence, the foundation upon which we will rightfully claim the mantle. And the Didact believes that humanity was a threat that should have been dealt with from the very beginning. Now she appears most troubled, most reluctant to continue. He will begin a program to eradicate all suspect species, purge all dangerous planets, wipe the galaxy clean of threats, never again allow the galaxy to rise up against Forerunners. The phrasing, as if the entire galaxy in itself is a threat, is hauntingly familiar. The clarity of expression, the perversion as well as the demonic purity. That isn't the Didact I remember. The most noble of warriors throughout all the Ecumene, I say. Surely you recognize the dark nature of that approach. Do you support him in this? Heart and soul, he is the Didact. He is commander. He is broken. The Ecumene is broken, Lifeshaper. The Ecumene discarded warrior servants. And does that mean all life deserves to suffer, to be extinguished, leaving only Forerunners? Is the rule of the mantle without meaning? The last shell of her reserve is cracking. There is meaning, and there is duty, Lifeshaper. Which duty foremost? The mantle, always. Then the best thing we can do for the Didact is to stop him, force him to reason. The Cryptum. Another exile, Lifeshaper? And what about your duty to him? This is not my Didact, Endurance. This is no longer my husband. Is he the Didact you knew so well? The warrior who would have been your husband had he not chosen me? This pierces her. The reserve shatters, and her anguish at this wound, long since crusted over but never healed, is heartrending. Warriors do not reveal their emotions thus, not lightly. Unfair. Unjust. Necessary. You knew? She asks. I offered to set him free to return to his rate. He declined. Such was his love, she says sadly. Together we can save him, I say. We are the only ones, and we must save him. In his present state, or anything like his present state, he must never be allowed to control Requiem or to unleash these Prometheans. I have now played all my cards. My deck is empty. I have to rely on the honor and honesty and ultimately the warrior wisdom of a female of another rate whom I once bested, who does not like me, who deeply resents me, and has for thousands of years. I now go to Mantle's approach. The Didact is making final preparations there to transfer his command and all of his ancillas to Requiem. How much has my husband failed to foresee, to prepare? Is it possible he cannot conceive, even now, even in his madness, perhaps because of his madness, that I am capable of betraying him? I am escorted by a single monitor, which Endurance has placed at my complete disposal. I need to evaluate the Didact's health and prepare his security, I tell it as we flow along down the ship's central access corridor. Understood, Lifeshaper. It waves aside the ship's inspection fields. We enter Mantle's approach. The hatch to Requiem seals behind us. I wonder if it will open again, if I will be allowed to return. I'm still not completely convinced that Endurance supports me. All is deception in the Didact's life. Perhaps that has touched her as well. He has insisted that I be armed and be made part of his protection detail. A weapon shall be procured, Lifeshaper, the monitor says. Shall I announce you to the Didact? He is aware of my presence. So be it, Lifeshaper. How few of these details have been attended to. The Didact's lack of finesse is shocking, but I begin to understand. This is my husband's final sanctuary. To believe he is weak here in any way might be more than he could possibly bear. To believe that Endurance would turn against his plans, join with me. Inconceivable. On Requiem, nothing can or shall betray the Didact. A rifle is delivered. A compact, slender fascis of plasma and microwave guides. Extremely powerful. A control panel fits to my armor's glove, adjusting quickly to my smaller finger span. I examine its workings, request guidance. The monitor instructs my ancilla. My armor learns quickly. I barely pay attention. The didact is making final preparations in his quarters. It says, in hours he will secure Mantle's approach and shut down its functions. I presume he maintains a combat cryptum on his ship. That he does, Lifeshaper. Prepare it for transfer to Requiem. It shall be done, Lifeshaper. The monitor pauses. Lifeshaper, the didact tells us he was not in fact aware of your presence. A sign of his deteriorating health, perhaps. The monitor is out of its depths in such matters. He suggests a meeting immediately. I project signs of gladness, hiding any concern. Request, of course, granted. A doorway opens before me into the darkness. I presume this monitor will now destroy me. I cannot expect success beyond what I've already achieved, which is remarkable. Instead, it leads me deeper into the ship's command desk. Here I find coldness, emptiness. The didact stands alone before a partial readout of Requiem security. His armor lies folded in a repository awaiting his attention. He does not even turn as I enter. Wife, he says, I did not expect your presence after all that has happened. All I feel from him, all I hear in his voice is a softly simmering hatred. Duty to my husband must be foremost, I say.
Loyalty, our greatest bond. But clearly you are distressed by what I have done. Perhaps you are also here to oversee my plans for your humans.
I am, I say. I seek explanation, so that I may be comforted.
Pardon my boldness, but before now, you have always acceded to my strategic superiority.
We have always discussed such matters, I remind him.
The gathering was necessary,
he insists. What do you plan for them?
The human essences will go where all but one of my Prometheans have already gone. Their loyalty is now past question. They are our only hope against the parasite.
How? Only now does he turn and face me. His eyes are deep sunk, empty.
They have been composed. You know that,
he says. The skin of his face creases like a drying fruit, beyond weariness, beyond emotion. If nothing else has persuaded endurance, perhaps seeing him as he is now. The cryptum is now his only hope for recovery. To emerge in time, healthy and strong and sane.
Your humans will find immortality as a new kind of weapon,
he explains, his voice low.
They are now Prometheans, an honor I have granted them, though they do not deserve it.
But why my humans?
Even as weak primitives, they retain a tremendous instinct for war. They will make formidable fighters. Their essences are being inserted into thousands more Prometheans, a force unlike anything the Flood has ever encountered.
So humans, your enemies, will share that honor with your old comrades, the essences of those who killed our children. That is justice? Mention of our children evokes a mere quirk of expression, then a glance to one side, as if briefly distracted by the buzzing of a small, innocuous insect. But he does not deign to acknowledge the weapon. Clearly, he believes I am no threat. I might as well not exist.
They brought the parasite to our shores. Now they will serve to cauterize it,
he says. I lift the weapon. My glove merges with the panel. We are one. Armor. Me. Weapon. I can conceive of no better fate for him than long sojourn in the domain, reacquaintance with ancestors, with our honor, our history. Such as it may be, away from this universe. Now he looks my way, now he realizes. I fire. The bolts wrap him in curls of positronic lightning. Whenever they touch, they paralyze, numb. They encircle his head last, and his eyes are fixed on me, expressing no surprise, expressing nothing. After a moment of silent protest, he collapses to the floor. Even now, I wonder if he expected this, planned for it. Ever the master at strategy, ever the genius at the finest of tactics. Endurance walks around the cryptum, the pallet that supports the stunned didact and his folded armor. Her face is dark, stricken. How long should the didact rest? She asks, her voice shaking. How long would you suggest? I respond. I need to keep her balanced and willing to proceed. From here, I'll learn whether the Master Builder's installation succeeded or failed, whether the Flood has been destroyed, and whether you accomplished your reseeding. We have the resources to wait many thousands of years if necessary. Allowing my sentient species to achieve their own prominence until such time as they can begin to defend themselves. Living time is ever filled with challenges and competitions. I must return some of her warrior dignity. You, here, protecting him instead of me, I murmur. You are not a warrior, she says, drawing herself up. You never were. Suddenly, confronted with this strange insult, a statement that is only the truth, I lose my way through my own machinations. I feel an almost irrepressible urge to strike out at her. Life workers have always stepped lightly between the crushing burdens of builders and warriors. My armor tenses with pent-up anger. I quell it. There is no more we can say on this, no more absurdity or closure to be had. My love for the didact was long ago destined to become a curse despite all we could do. But I am Life Shaper. I alone can make a final effort to ensure that the mantle falls into the hands of its rightful heirs. And that is something that the didact, in his better centuries, believed in just as passionately. If one can serve the ghost of a living husband, and so it shall be put to endurance. I wish to leave something of myself here, I tell her. The didact in his right mind would not object. Endurance regards me with even stronger suspicion. What would you leave? If life workers succeed in repopulating the galaxy after the Flood is gone, if you have visitors who seek to challenge the didact, you can convey to them a message and a safeguard. And what will that message be? That is for the visitors, if any. It won't take long to deliver an imprint to your ancillary systems. Why should Requiem accept your imprint? You know what the didact has become, I tell her. He could emerge a danger both to himself and to others, even those who mean no harm. Her gaze is level, clear, all too discerning. What I leave of myself will serve as much to protect Requiem as to protect any visitors. She thinks this through. Her own uncertainty about the present situation weighs heavily. Your loyalty to your husband has never been questioned. Never. All shall benefit, I say. The didact must not control the Prometheans. This causes Endurance more difficulty. Very complicated, Life Shaper. Would you have me go against his commands? We have come this far. What was his last command? That I guard Requiem with my life, Endurance says. Then there is no contradiction, I say. You must guard Requiem. You must guard him. I have watched my husband for over 10,000 years, and now my imprint will help you watch him long after I'm gone. I hope I know enough of warrior psychology and tactical planning, as well as command structure and responsibility to make this case plausible. If you agree, I conclude. The moment is long and dangerous. Endurance in one way will resign herself to a continuing rivalry. Her opposite will be here, right alongside her. And yet, having finally got the didact all to herself, it is clear he has presented her with a great many quandaries. You believe he could endanger Forerunners, she says quietly. He will violate the mantle in order to seize it, unless he is held back, allowed to find himself again. I see it first in the way her gloved hands relax. Resigned, she says. With your help, we will guard Requiem, Life Shaper. She does indeed have the best interests of her commander at heart, but her resolve is not without flaw. A great warrior requires great enemies, Life Shaper, she says. Will the future present us with worthy opponents? Living time is fraught with peril, I say. This seems to give her the answer she seeks. Then so it shall be. The transfer from my armor to yours and from yours to the Requiem and Scylla's won't take more than a few seconds. Give it to me then, she says. We touch gloves. The transfer is made. Will she follow through? Has she played her own cards better than I have just to get me off Requiem? I have no way of knowing. I may never know. At last I command the combat cryptum to assemble. Rising on a stalk of light, the container begins to grow beneath the didact, lifts him upright, forcibly expels the pallet. The cryptum's many sections expand and shape themselves into a great fragmented sphere, into which the didact is centered. The fragments then join. The last gaps flash with hard light, close in, seal off. Finally, I can no longer see his face. How I ache through mind and body, how I grieve for the husbands I have lost. The cryptum rises on the stalk of light and is concealed in the upper chamber, amid other similar shapes to confuse whomever might disturb this place, however unlikely such visitors will be. The chamber fills with a deep booming and then a painful hiss. It is done, I say. Soon this world will sleep. Sentinels encourage me out of the chamber, back through the tortuous maze of corridors and ramps, across voids clouded by steam rising from roiling magma, vapors sucking and whirling into reclamation vents. On a narrow span crossing the final shaft before I reach the lock, I sense something behind me and turn to see a lone, quick machine unlike any I have seen before, moving behind us on delicate stalking legs. The machine carries another machine on its back that briefly wickers like an insect spreading its wings, and then others suddenly appear, many others, all of them collecting along a long side corridor that reshapes and closes as I watch. I reach for the one closest to me. If it is endurance, I do not know. The machine is silent, cold, a dark fate, but one that will serve the purpose well. From deep within Requiem, I hear hollow, echoing grinds and thumps that vibrate my boots, followed by, from all directions, a confusion of smoothly rushing sounds. I quickly depart, crossing the dock toward my ship, refusing to look at what I leave behind. Audacity seals its hatch. Catalog and I take our positions in the command center. My ship ascends the long cylinder, levels closing off behind as we pass. Sentinels escort us through the exterior gateway, and that also closes. Requiem is ready for its long wait. I have done all I can, short of destroying my husband, which I could never bring myself to do. I hope. Audacity expresses relief that we were even allowed to leave. This is a troubling construct, it confides. Are we on schedule for our next jump? Slipspace budget appears to be generous out here. Curious how much capacity is available now. Not at all curious, Catalog says. Slipspace reconciles across a number of years, forward and back. So say legal judgments on commercial usage. The Greater Arc no longer exists, and nearly all the Forerunner transits and communications have stopped. As well, there are no star roads locally to complicate matters. Space-time is quiet for Forerunners. But that openness may also mean that the Lesser Arc has yet to position its new halos. We may yet lose this race with the Flood. The Isodidact may or may not have survived. There may or may not be a command presence on the last Arc. I do not yet know the situation on Erda Tyrene. Has Chant-de-Green recovered enough humans to fulfill life worker plans? If Audacity diverts to the Lesser Arc, humanity may come to an end. An affront to all my millennia of planning. I'm sunk in miserable indecision. My brain races with excuses, and then my course is very clear. It's as if, without benefit of cryptum or haruspis, or any other intermediary, I feel the touch of the domain, calling me, directing me. The didact is not the only one to have a vision of the future. I'd like to send a message, I tell Audacity. To the Lesser Arc, to prepare for your arrival? No. To all Forerunner vessels. All? Even those infected by the flood? Especially those, I say. Tell them I am on my way to Urda Tyrene. Tell all our ships that we have at long last found a cure for the flood, but must assemble one last component on Urda Tyrene. I do not understand your purpose, Lifeshaper. One desperate maneuver stacked upon another. For centuries, the false notion of a cure for the flood cure had driven forerunners, myself included, to depraved behavior. Perhaps now it can be used against the very evil that conceived it. We need to give the lesser Ark time, I say. A few extra days might be enough. A diversion, a distraction. Draw the flood in. How unified are flood components? How unified and singular is a grave mind? An intriguing question, one that moves to the heart of some of the major problems in biology. A question to distract me during our jump, and perhaps to have answered when we arrive. After that, I say, we need to contact the Lesser Ark. Attempting now, Lifeshaper. For what purpose? If Bornstellar has survived, we will need his help to procure a very important ship. Very well. I will send this message at once. Do you believe he has survived? I cannot answer. Without him, hope for all sentient beings has at last been extinguished.